Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the bug on my visor. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave, how's tricks?
Very good, thank you. And yourself?
Very, very good. So, strange weekend because it was the first round of the BTCC and I was sat at home watching it on the telly. Mixed feelings. But do you know what? It's the first time I've ever watched the whole, obviously, but it felt strange, watched the whole qualifying session from front to back because it's only, you know, they stream it and I'm normally in the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
I quite enjoyed it.
It must be a very strange thing. For those that haven't realised, by the way, we're recording this episode on the 24th of April. So as Jason says, the BTCC season has just started whenever you are listening to this. But yeah, having done that for all of your adult life, really, yeah, wasn't it? You know, it must be very, very strange. And like sports people say this a lot, don't they? You know, when they retire, you know, footballers, that first year without the pre-season training, you know, and what you're going through, it must be quite an adjustment.
Yeah. I think rather than sports people, you should have used the word athletes. I think
athletes. Of course, the word that I meant was athletes.
Of course. Anyway, enough of all that nonsense.
And talking of athletes,
indeed. Now, our guest today is someone very special and someone that I know well, extremely well, actually, but very, very well. She's a legend in the rallying world, a TV presenter, a keynote speaker, a motivational coach, and one of the fastest people on the planet on four wheels. It is, of course, a really good friend of mine and my former telly partner, the one and only Penny Mallory.
Oh, JP, it's so nice to see you.
And you, darling, and you. How's tricks? All good?
Yeah, life is fantastically good, actually. I've been up to all sorts of things, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about. But life is very, very good. Thank you. And I'm hoping it is with you too.
Ah, yes, all good. And when Dave, with you?
I'm fine. No, don't worry about me. I'm fine.
Oh, Dave,
when did you two last see each other, just out of interest? Has it been a while?
Well, I think we need to set the scene here because I first knew Jason when I was instructing, I think. Does it go back that far? Like when I was in nappies almost. It was
early 90s.
I was in my, it must be 35 years ago-ish, which is ridiculous. So we were instructing. So I met Jason. And then, of course, your paths cross in motorsport and that world. Mm-hmm. And then we got
to... Do you remember where? Where we instructed when we met? Do you remember? I do.
No idea.
Rally drive up near Grimsby at Howard's place. Do you remember?
Oh, God. Yes.
Yeah. It was called First Time Racing back then, I think.
I can't remember. That's insane. And then do you remember I got a job on telly and they said, who else could join us? And I said, I've got a mate called Jason Plato. And I got you in for a screen test and there you were. You were my co-presenter then for a few years.
Absolutely. Well, in fact, we've spoken about this with, you know, because we had Richard Hammond on not that long ago on here. And do you know what? All those stories came out. Because you remember, we were at TRL or somewhere like that, at Chobham, where the screen test was. And I kind of got a shoe in because, you know, my friendship with you. And also then we just hit it off with Mike. And Hammond screen tested the afternoon and I was in the morning. Do you remember that? Well, he still holds a bloody grudge to this day about all that. Do you remember that day?
You know, I don't know if you remember when the producers and me and Mike were talking about all the screen tests and they said, this guy called Richard Hammond's come in. He's a little bit cheesy, probably hasn't got much of a future on TV. And that's exactly what they said. And what did anyone know at that time? Because, he'd just gone to a superstar. But I remember that being said very, very clearly.
Well, the funny thing was, Penny, when he was on here, as Jason's alluding to, which was on the end of the last series, and it was quite clear that it was almost like therapy for certain bits, because he had a lot of issues, I think, in terms of how things were with you and Jason.
Did he?
He was saying things like, you know, I'm over it, but only just. And he wasn't joking, was he?
No, that can't be right.
No, honestly, it was, because he was doing the Men and Motors thing. I know I knew Richard, obviously, because he was the PR man at Renault when I was driving for Williams. And he literally used to, you know, sort my baggage out and stuff. And that, you know, his thing was, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but that was his job, you know, to look after me, which is a tough thing. And his thing was, look, you've already got a proper bloody job. I want to be in TV and stop nicking my gigs.
Yeah, he was doing Men and Motors for years, and he worked harder than anyone else, and he worked for no money, and all he wanted was a big break on telly. And I remember, I don't know if you remember, a Mercedes party, and he came up to us and he said, guys, I just look up to you all. You're just amazing. One day I want to get where you guys are. And I do an after-dinner gag now, and I say, Richard said, I really look up to you guys. And I said, well, Richard, at 5'5", you look up to pretty much everyone. But he worked so hard. And that was probably the biggest kick in the guts when he didn't get that gig. But then, of course, he's overtaken everybody in TV stardom world. So he's done all right for himself, I think.
Oh, yeah.
He certainly got his break, didn't he? That's for sure. So listen, Penny, I want to talk about the book, obviously. But before we do that, and I think this sort of all leads into what we're sort of discussing at the moment. I never realized the toughness, if you like, of your start in life and how, you know, you really did defy the odds. And, you know, talk us through sort of how it began and if you like, the essence of the beginnings of the book, and then how it got you to where you launched yourself in motorsport.
So I'll do it in a nutshell, but basically I was 6 years old. I watched the television. I think Grandstand came on and I saw cars whizzing across the screen, and something in me went, that's the most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. I'm going to be a rally driver when I grow up. And of course, you know, as you do, you know, I want to be a ballerina or a show jumper, but that image stayed in my mind. Parked it up, didn't think about it for years. Occasionally it would pop up and I go, oh, that dream I had one day I could do it. But I grew up in a very sort of weird, dysfunctional house, and I left at 14 and never went back. And then I was just sort of on my backside for a few years, and I ended up, you know, homeless hostels and heroin addict boyfriend, all that sort of bleh. But still with this kind of optimistic view and this little dream. And I just had a day where I thought, I've got to sort my life out. That one thing I've always wanted to do, drive rally, because I'm going to go to a rally school. Mm-hmm. And of course, little did I know that day was going to change the entire course of my life, because you're meant to go as a punter and do half a day and then drive away and get on with your life. Well, I couldn't. I drove away going, I've got to do it tomorrow and the next day. And it's the first time I felt excited about anything in my whole life. So it was sort of, it was sort of fueled by trying to get my father's approval, who disowned me when I'd left home. But I thought if I could be a rally champion, maybe my dad would like me again. And that sort of, it's easy to joke about, but actually it fueled this is sort of intense desire, because of course, as Jason will tell you, every obstacle is put in your way in motorsport, and you've got to find a way around it. You've got to want it really bad.
Yeah.
Which I did. So I was very, very lucky. I had sort of 12 years driving all sorts of stuff, and ended up driving in a World Rally car for Ford, which we did for Driven, actually, which was fantastic. So yeah, that's it in a very, very short nutshell.
No, it's extraordinary. And so going back to, you know, you watching sort of car racing on the TV, and that's what obviously sort of sparked your initial interest. That's what I want to be. Yeah. I mean, had you come from, were there cars and an interest in motorsport in the family beforehand, or was this completely just something that you had decided was your thing?
My dad took me to Bangor Racing. He took me to racetracks. My dad was crazy about cars, and he had he had quite a lot of vintage cars that he would tinker with and do jobs, and I just sit and watch him. And you know, I think it was my seventh birthday or something, he bought me a moped that was just in pieces, and he said, "Happy birthday!" And I'm like, "What do I do with that?" What he'd actually done was bought me a moped for him to build for himself to commute to the station and back, and I didn't get my hands on that moped till I was 14.
No way.
So, he would definitely influence the sort of automotive thing. And so the must, I guess it just gets in your blood somehow, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely would have come from my father initially.
I mean, I can relate to all of that because it is that, it's that burning desire and that you know, you set yourself a target, go, right, I'm after this. But is this true that I've read you want to go across the Atlantic in a rowing boat?
Oh, God, Jake.
Is that true?
Well, I've had this dream for many years, actually, probably the last 4 or 5 years. And then a friend of mine did it and set a world record, and I was so jealous. I thought, I've got to do it. So I signed up last year, joined a team, bought a boat, didn't get on the boat, actually. Then the team fell to pieces, and I'm now not rowing the Atlantic, so I'm devastated. But it is the one thing that's still eating away at me. I've got to do it at some point. But it's not going to be happening in December, which is...
I always thought you were a nutcase, and that's just confirmed it.
Well,
why do you want to go across the Atlantic in a rowing boat?
Well, and it is the tiniest boat you've ever seen, because it's an adventure, because I'm scared of water. And it's something, it's to conquer a fear, to because I can, because I think it would be an amazing adventure. It'd be the best feeling to have done it. So I was running out of things, because I've done lots of challenges over the years, and I was running out of things that were sort of firing my belly. And the Atlantic row was the one most exciting thing that I had to tick off. So, yeah, it's all gone horribly wrong. But
it's just a rain check. It's a rain check. It's a little obstacle.
It's a little door shut.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I'm getting that impression, and so I mean, it sounds to me that, you know, there's you're always trying to push yourself and always trying to over, which I guess is the essence of the book. Is that right? You know, which you released last November, 365 Ways to Develop Mental Toughness, a day-by-day guide to living a happier and more successful life. Is it all about how you harness that energy in terms of, and how you can then sort of convey that to other people who may be using it to overcome their own, I don't know, it could be athletic challenges, it could be mental challenges, it could be anything, I suppose.
So I just need to set the scene with this, really. I didn't know anything that mental toughness was a thing. I came across this concept maybe 4 or 5 years ago. When I understood what mental toughness was, I was like, oh my God, that's me. Suddenly I make sense. I had been building mental toughness, developing my mental toughness, my confidence, my courage, my my ability to see an obstacle as an opportunity and something exciting. I'd been doing that all my life without really putting a name to it. So now I speak at conferences all the time about how you can develop mental toughness. And so I was invited to write 365 Ways. It's now my complete passion. I just love, love, love what I do. And there's nothing more exciting than helping somebody to develop their confidence or to start to turn things around. And it's that sort of changing lives. It sounds a bit dramatic, but, you know, if I speak at a conference with 400 people, if I've helped one person see something differently or think about something differently, job's done. So it's brilliant. And the book is one of those, it's a loo book, really. You sort of pick it up and put it down and you dip in and dip out.
I won't be putting it next to my loo books, let me tell you that, because that would look very odd. I have things like Viz's Profanosaurus in my toilet.
Yeah, well, I think you'd probably use my book as loo roll if it was in your loo anyway, Jay. So.
Well, see, you couldn't be further from the truth there, actually, Penny, because there are moments in all of our journeys in life where you actually learn quite a lot about yourself. And mental toughness is something which is will be very easy for everyone to just look at me and go, you know, he's got mental toughness. But do you know what? Everybody at certain times in life struggles with certain with mental health and mental fitness, strength, resilience.
Right.
And I'm very aware of that. Very aware of that. And you know, all of us are not as bulletproof as we actually probably project.
Yeah, and you would be a classic example of that. And actually, you know, I don't know too much of your backstory. I know you've told me about your family and your dad and your blah, blah, blah. So I've got a good picture, but there'll be times where even somebody as resilient as you, and I have seen you bounce back from disaster. I have seen you push for the thing you want so hard. And, you know, you're one of the few people I've ever met who simply will not let it go until you've got it. And that is mental toughness. But that's not to say that, you know, you'll have days where you can't face it, or you can't do it, or you're just in a really shit place. And that's normal because you're human and you're complex. And, you know, some people struggle to get out of bed in the morning. You will have experienced some odd feelings watching the BTCC and not being there. That would have been, it will have affected you in ways that you could just get over, or it could really get you down. And that's all building mental toughness, just experiencing life and being able to sort of bounce back to your pre-crisis state or your pre-drama. And that is all, you can learn it, you can develop it.
Yeah, in your experience, and obviously, you know, what you just sort of said there with Jason is very true. You know, we all have certain days where it just doesn't come together for us. But one would hope that if today is a bad day, tomorrow might be a better day, or the next tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. But do you find that in your experience of working with people that everybody has the ability to kind of harness something strong within them to overcome, you know, as in everybody is to an extent malleable and able to be a better version of themselves?
With there's no exceptions to that. It's 100% true for everybody. So, you know, it doesn't matter what any of us achieve, however big, small or insignificant, every day can be a struggle for people, and every day can be a joy for people. And it's life. It goes up and it goes down. And sometimes it's easier and sometimes it's really tough. And that's just normal. And the easier that we can ride those waves, the more enjoyable your life will be, won't it? Because if you get knocked sideways by a crisis and you can't pull yourself back, life is just miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's one thing which is without a shadow of a doubt, everything is about what's in here.
Correct. Well, you know that.
What's in there? And you know, we do have the power to change the way we feel just through up in there, but that can get knocked and hurt sometimes, and you can't see.
If you think about when you're racing and somebody punts you off or something, it's this that's going to get you back on the track and back at the front of the pack. Mm-hmm. It's not your driving ability necessarily.
No.
So, you know, you could match talent and braking, gear change ability, and everyone could be equal. But the person that's the strongest, most hungry, is usually the person that will win, because there's nothing really that can get in the way of that intense desire for something, because your ability just sort of accelerates when you want something so bad. And I've seen Jason do this time and time again. You are quite an example of somebody who can bounce back from a crisis and be really, really good mentally. I've also seen you really in a terrible state.
Yeah,
mentally.
Do
you remember?
I do.
Out the window, Jason Plato. I remember.
No, I do. Anyway. Look, cars. Tell us about. When did it all start? Do you remember your first car? Do you remember when you passed your driving test? Do you remember? Just tell us.
Okay, so because I had no money and I was on my backside, I couldn't learn to drive till I was 19. And I got a boyfriend who said he would teach me to drive for free. So I never paid for a single driving lesson or anything in my life. I said to him, I need a car. Could you go to the auction and buy me one? He came back. You think he spent 500 quid on an orange Fiat Strada. Do you remember that?
Oh, that's a beauty.
There are none left because they've all rusted to dust.
Rusted.
And he came back and I was like, you kidding me? I can't drive that. It's orange. Anyway, I did my driving test in my car. The speedometer broke during my test, which they should have been an instant fail, but somehow they passed me. So one test, no official lessons, and I got wheels. So obviously, I then left the boyfriend.
he fulfilled his purpose completely.
Exactly. Right. Thanks very much. I'm done with that. And then I just fell in love with driving. In those days, there weren't all the traffic cameras everywhere. Sounds awful, but I definitely drove poorly. All over the place, far too fast. So I was getting my first car was just utter freedom for the first time in my life. I couldn't explain the sense of freedom I had. And I remember driving, I passed my test, drove home. I instantly thought, I'm going to break every rule I can. I had one elbow out the window. I got two fingers on. I just like, I want now, I've passed. I'm going to break all the rules.
Yeah.
Which is me all over. So it was the most exciting thing. And then I set up a business a few years later and I got myself a Peugeot 205 GTI. And I actually thought this was the most incredible piece of kit I've ever had in my life.
I mean, they were epic, weren't they?
Oh my God, it was so much fun. But I went to took a sponsor of mine to a rally championship dinner dance in Wales to collect the award for being a great driver. And on the way home, I fell asleep and smashed this car with him, my sponsor, sat next to me.
No way.
Totally wrote off the car. What did I get next? That was so embarrassing. The bloody trophy on the back seat, and you know, like,
no way,
yes way.
look at the face on you now. Sorry, oh, yes way, God.
Yeah, so bad. And now I'm driving an electric car, Jace. How bad's that?
Oh, do you know what? That's a question.
Let's save that a little bit. That comes a little bit later. After the 205 GTI, then, which obviously sadly got bent.
I can't remember. I've had, I honestly can't remember what I had next. I've had just absolute terrible cars. I think I paid 200 quid. My life has been up and down a lot. So my cars have gone from super duper luxury Mercedes, you know, all Fandango, to a 200 quid, what was it called? A Volkswagen. There was 10 of them ever made. And it was the most hideous piece of kit. And then, of course, when I got to present Driven, I got a new car every Monday delivered to my house.
For review purposes?
So suddenly,
Actually, can I just add a little bit of truth on this? Not always for review purposes.
Oh, well, true.
So we're testing a car when in 2 weeks. Do you know what? It might be a nice idea for me to live with it for a couple of weeks. You know that Bentley, that Porsche, that Escort Cosworth, whatever it may be. You really want it for 2 weeks? Well, yeah, obviously. Do you remember all that?
Oh, mate, my kids thought it was normal to have a new car every week. And it took them years to go, why are we driving this car again? Where's the new car? And I was like,
we've had this for weeks.
They thought everybody got a new car every Monday. they were in one of the shows. I don't know if you remember. They were little tiny ones. But yeah, it was amazing having the press cars, because you've got a free tank of fuel apart from anything else. And it was just probably the biggest perk of the whole job. And then, of course, when the show is decommissioned, not only, because I don't think I've ever said this to anyone out loud, because I had such a weird family, when I was presenting car programs, that was my family. So the cameraman and the sound man and the presenters and the producers, they were my family. And when the show ended, my world fell to pieces, because not only did I lose my family, I lost my cars and I lost them. You know, everything fell. I was lucky I did get to present the World Rally Championship as well, which was brilliant. But of course, that came to an end. So that family ended. So TV is an amazing thing to do. But for me, when the end comes, it's devastating for me, because I lost so much more than you would ever see if you were watching it on the television. Bigger than that.
Do you know what? There's that word which is always mentioned when people reference TV and stuff, which is chemistry. And I'll just reinforce that with Penny. Our little fat family, as you put it, me, yourself and Brewer. My God, did we have some... Not just laughs and wonderful times, but it was magical, wasn't it?
Do you remember when you were driving and I was in the front and Brewer went under in the footwell at the back and nobody could breathe, and it was almost like call an ambulance because we couldn't physically breathe for laughing. but it went on for ages and nobody could get a breath. And most days I would have pains in my side from laughing because you two were probably the funniest people I've, and you were so good together. It was the most enjoyable, it wasn't a job, most enjoyable time of my life. I've never laughed so much in my life.
And that's a really healthy thing, isn't it? I think, you know, that ability to properly, uncontrollably laugh out loud, you know, on an almost daily, it's a genuinely, I think it's a really, I don't know about the medical side, but it's a really healthy thing, I think, for your head.
It's so good for you to laugh. We were an absolute pain for the crew because we kept giggling and crying and we couldn't stop giggling. And once you get the giggles and you can't stop, and they're like, guys, just stop it. We need to get on.
You remember?
It was, and it does make you feel so good. A good laugh. Yeah.
Do you remember the hole in the ice, which Brewer lost his bottle and wouldn't do in Lapland? We were at the ice hotel up in Lapland and basically he bailed out.
His name was Peter and he was naked, the guy that, do you remember? And I did the ice bath and I came, I went through, they cut the hole in the ice. I don't remember you doing
I was with you and we were in the sauna before and then Peter sat in the sauna with a start pot naked and I'm looking at Penny going, this is a bit uncomfy.
It was a bit weird. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I remember going in the iced water and coming out and my hair went ice instantly. I ran my hands through my hair and I thought, oh my God, all my hair's going to actually snap off and I won't be able to film tomorrow. But it was, I'm glad you remember that. That was such a cool trip in the Arctic Circle. Yeah.
Amazing.
Very good. You mentioned then electric cars and Penny. We should discuss the elephant in the room. It's always this slightly awkward part of the podcast and what brought you to the world of electric vehicles?
My Porsche, actually. So I bought a Porsche, and which is what I'd always wanted, and I bought it and my accountant said, "What? Do you have any idea what that's going to cost you?" And I said, no, I didn't think that through. Tell me. And he gave me these numbers. He said, you really, really, this doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, but I've always wanted a Porsche. So I only had it for 6 months because he said, if you want to be tax efficient with your driving, you have to get an electric car, buy it outright in the business, and you will save loads and loads of tax. Mm-hmm. That is the truth of why I'm driving a Tesla.
I thought you were going to say Taycan. I was about to go, oh, fair play. That's about the only one I would drive.
Because
you're in a dirty Tesla.
Yeah, because I spoke to one person. They said, don't go Porsche electric. Just go for the Tesla. So I did. And actually, I hated it for about 3 weeks. And then I fell in love with it. I don't think I could go back now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
really.
How come? Why? Explain what was the tipping point?
When I understood that you can recharge on a journey without it stressing you out completely, because I went to Stansted Airport a lot, like 5% charge, panicking, it's because I hadn't planned the route. So once I understood that was all fine and it's easy to do, and I wasn't having to go to dirty, filthy petrol stations, that was quite nice. And then, of course, it's actually quite quick. It's quiet. Mm-hmm. It's not the most comfy car by any means, but I bought a Model Y, so it's like an SUV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I just got used to it. And I haven't driven a proper engine car for, I don't know, 8 months. I don't know if I could change gear now.
Yeah, of course you could. But I'll tell you what's really interesting about what you've said, which is my beef with them and the way I you know, my life is, and if I need to go 200 miles up there or 50 miles there, it's the in my head, the perception that I can't stop for half an hour, that'll destroy me. But so it's interesting that was your epiphany moment, if you like, that through planning and through a little bit of changing the way you think and plan your then that fear is gone.
My car has a 300-mile range, which is absolute rubbish because you've got to take 100 miles off whatever it says, and then I work that out. But when you understand that the Tesla supercharges 15 minutes and it'll give you, you know, the 100 miles you need to get home or whatever, when you understand what to look out for, where to find them, and really it's just no, I'm used to it now. It's no bother to just pull over for 15 minutes or half an hour. Or I might leave. If I had to go to Devon the other day, so I left an hour early, got to Devon, charged it when I was in Devon, so that I didn't have to stop coming back. Yeah. And it's easy. It's so easy. Yeah. And I am the last person you would ever expect to hear banging on about electric cars. I never thought I would do this ever.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said it's really interesting, because something's triggered you to go, well, yeah, I've made that. And being completely candid, I actually quite enjoyed the things you said. Like, they're quiet, the talk. Actually, it's probably a good thing to drive electric cars for lots of reasons, but I just can't get over that.
Yeah,
what I perceive to be aggro.
I know. And well, it was for tax. It was HMRC that made me conquer it.
God bless them.
So yeah, I've just got HMRC to thank. But I honestly did hate it for first few weeks, going, what have I done? I have just made the biggest mistake ever. And then I fell in love.
You see, wow. I totally understand and appreciate everything that you've said. I suppose, maybe like you, Jason, I'm surprised that you don't still require almost like a sort of like a weekend
fix.
Toy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I totally appreciate that it makes complete sense and is practical and efficient and all these other great things. But I'm surprised that you don't miss that sort of slightly animalistic kind of petrol beating heart a bit.
Well, I probably do. It's just that I ignore it, maybe. I don't do any competitive driving, and all the driving I do is to and from work. Yeah. And it's my life is different to how it was. I'm not a competition driver anymore. My requirements from my vehicle are very different. But who doesn't love a big engine and total luxury and speed and acceleration and all that fantastic stuff? It's just that I'm sounding really boring. I want you to stop talking now because I sound so dull.
So Ted, tell me, when was that? You must have had, because you're still Penny McMurray, you must have a little moment every now and then going, yeah.
I just did a speed awareness course last week, so that will tell you.
I've got one coming
how
up.
Much over, how much over the limit were you?
Well, I know, but you're not meant to brag about this, because when you do the course and you go, oh my God, you're so right, it's not going to get me there any quicker. So I'm still in my post speed awareness course halo mode.
You're in your resentment mode.
I was only a few, of course, only a few miles an hour over the limit, but now I know those few miles an hour were very important.
Absolutely. And
very naughty of me.
Absolutely. Very and nice. This is what I'm going to take into my third speed awareness course, which is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yes, I used to teach bloody things years ago. I used to do
yes. you were one of those at the front of the class, weren't you? I do recall that.
I used to do oh, how embarrassing. I didn't do it for very long, and I wasn't probably very good at it either. But when we were instructing, if you remember, it was quite hard to make a living. So you just sort of do advanced driving stuff and speed awareness and whatever you can get to do with driving just to pay the rent. Yeah.
Well, I remember the first time, because obviously now you do them online and whatnot, sort of off the back of lockdown. But the first one, which was a lot of years ago, and I'm thinking, oh God, I've got to drive to Bicester to go and do this speed awareness course. I got done on the M40, blah, blah, blah. And I think I'm going to turn up and it's going to be me and a whole load of kind of like joyriders off some estate somewhere, and it's like, it couldn't be further from the truth, because it's the most sort of mild mannered sort of felons, if you like. I mean, it was all mums on the school runs. It was old dears because obviously the nature of the course is such that if you were properly speeding, you wouldn't qualify for it anyway. So it's all people that were doing 34 and a 30 or 43 and a 40 or something.
I know. And there was a lady on my course last week and she was saying, I just feel so awful because I never speed. I never go over the limit. And I'm like, oh my God. She's a properly nice person. I was just lucky I only got done once. But no, in my time, I've probably done four or five of these as a, as a naughty person.
Yeah.
So, I just managed to time it that I don't have to get the points. But now I've said this, I'm going to get done, aren't I? But I am being really, really good at the moment.
Well, and also, it's just hard. It's really hard to go over the limit much nowadays because there's so much traffic around. And I'm not, I don't mean that, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Excuses, but like 15, 20 years ago, oh man, you know, on a country road, there really wasn't anything around. And the roads were better quality then because they're all knackered now. Because, it's a different, it's a whole different landscape, isn't it?
It really is very different driving experience now. I live in the Cotswolds and, you know, you have to drive in the middle of every road because the potholes at the side are just horrendous. So you can't, you kind of have to behave yourself a bit. But anyway.
Right, here we go. This is we ask all our guests this, and we've had some really interesting questions, answers rather, to the same question. If you could have a two-car fantasy garage where it was someone else's checkbook, whatever you fancy, it doesn't matter. What would those two cars be?
I would have to say one of them would have to be a Ford Focus World Rally car because it's the most incredible piece of engineering machinery that I've ever sat in. Yeah. And incredibly hard to drive, you know, clutchless gear changes, sequential box, left-hand drive, forward drive, like bonkers, and sounds like a bag of spanners when it's driven slowly. But when you start, you know, it starts to sing and dance a bit, there's nothing else to compare. And I know that the World Rally Cars now, very different ball game, but, you know, that's my very special piece of very special car that I would have to have in the garage. Do you know what? Yeah. The car still sits in the reception of Malcolm Wilson's factory in Carlisle.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it?
S9 FMC. And so no that way. Might...
No way. How good's that? Oh, Dave, a fellow registration recorder.
See, I thought it was just me that knew the registration of every car I've ever had, or my dad or anyone.
That registration is very special because FMC, obviously Ford Motor Company, and there was only four cars at the time with an FMC plate. And, you know, the fact that I was driving one was off the scale crazy amazing. So that car would be in my garage.
Of course. Yeah.
And what would I put next to it? I want to say my Tesla, but you're going to groan and moan if I say that because it would be two ends of the spectrum, isn't it?
Look at the face on Jason.
Well,
Penny, what the hell's happened?
Because
this is your fantasy garage. Your fantasy garage.
Oh, fantasy garage. All right. So not a real garage. Okay. So all right. So if it was fantasy, it might be. What would I have in there? I don't spend a lot of time fantasizing about cars these days.
What do you fantasize about?
Don't ask her that, Jason.
No,
don't.
No, I just responded to what to the statement.
Can't think of
you'll be on another course.
I can't think of. I'm gonna stick with my Tesla because.
Wow, fair play.
There was another load of high performance cars I could roll out, but actually I wouldn't choose that over the World Rally Car. So it's sort of pointless having that. So let's have both ends of the spectrum. In however much it dismays you, I'm sorry.
No, I think it's all good.
It's great. It's great. And also that, that WRC car and that type of car, you're the first person in what? How many series are we on now, Dave? Six?
This is series six, yes.
This is series six. That has put something like a rally car or a race car in their garage. You're the first person and that's inspired. That's great.
I'd want it in my garage. What would your two fantasy cars be?
One would have to be the original McLaren F1 central driving position Gordon Murray car. That would just simply have to be there. And I'd want an F1 car in there. I'd want FW. I would, because you know I never got to do that. I'd really want one of those in there. And Sebastian Vettel owns probably the most, arguably one of the most iconic, but also probably the most clever Formula One car, which is Mansell's car, 14B, Red 5, with all the active suspension, the Renault V10 engine in. I mean, that would be... Because not only I could walk in the Gat garage and just looking at it, fall in love every day of every week. So, I'd have that and a McLaren for the road.
You'd definitely be on a speed awareness course the following week.
Right, yeah. Benny, here's a question for you. This is what we ask all of our guests. Jason and I think the music and cars go well together, so we need your fantasy drive, please. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? Most importantly, what are you driving?
Oh, man, you should have prepared me for this. Too big a question. Well, I could be driving through the States listening to Shania Twain with the roof down. I could be, oh, my God, I haven't thought this through. I like such a weird range of music, and I actually made a playlist for the Atlantic Row, and I was a bit shocked at how random my music taste is. I love a bit of rap. I love Eminem, and I love 50 Cent, and I love, you know, like all that nonsense. And I love, I can't even remember pop stars' names. I do like popular music, and I'm so rubbish. You really shouldn't ask me this question, because I can't remember the name of anyone. But I like happy music. I like music that just lifts my spirits. And I can't think of a single artist to say.
And what? Okay, well, just park that for a minute. What are you driving and where are you going to and from?
I'm going to Heathrow Airport to fly to Ibiza.
Bingo!
Tomorrow.
How are you?
Yes, I am. And that would be a very happy trip because it's taken me somewhere sunny, and I would just have some real cool vibes and maybe some Ibiza chill type stuff, get me in the mood.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd be in some super duper swanky Mercedes with great big leather seats and probably a little drinks cabinet next to me. But I might even have a driver for this trip, Jace. I might even
feet up
and take it easy.
Well, also depending on what happens on the
first.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
A first, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I was about to say, depending on what happens with the speeding or whatever, you might need to drive.
But isn't that great? In the back of a Merc, driving to that nasty journey, going to Heathrow Airport because you're going somewhere cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's a lovely image. Yeah. And on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Well, unfortunately, that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux, the UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs. And as I've said before, on many occasions, can help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, a huge thanks to you. But our special guest this week, Penny Mallory, thank you so much. Thank you.
No, it's been great, Penny. Lovely having you on. Don't forget, the book is out now, 365 Ways to Develop Mental Toughness, a day-by-day guide to living a happier and more successful life. Available, presumably, from all good bookshops, and even some of the bad bookshops, I reckon, have got it as well. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you'd like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
So thanks again, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!